Does your antiperspirant keep you dry all day? Dove Men Plus Care Dry Spray goes on instantly dry for a cleaner feel and offers 48 hours sweat and odor protection. Let me repeat that. 48 hours of sweat and odor protection. Use it and don't even think about it. Also, Dove Men Dry Spray contains Dove's unique one-quarter moisturizing cream that helps protect your skin. Try Dove Men Plus Care Dry Spray. Goes on dry. Clean feel all day.
Which fictional sporting event would you have most liked to attend?
And now,
this is the Rich Eisen Show.
We go with Sizzler.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
Sweep the leg.
Everybody can change.
It's the name
right off the bat.
That is fictional.
Rudy's real.
That is fictional.
Rudy's,
I agree.
Today's guests, former Cowboys head coach Jason Garrett, two-time World Series champion David Wells, plus Bucks running back Leonard Fournette. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
All right, everybody. Welcome to this edition of the Rich Eisen Show, live on NBC Sports on Peacock, Sirius XM Channel 85, NBC Sports Audio. Great to chat with everybody listening on the Rich Eisen Show Terrestrial Radio Network, wherever you can get our show, on Odyssey, on our podcast platform as well. We appreciate one and all. YouTube.com/Rich Eisen Show for anybody who may miss anything. Christopher Brockman, how are you over there, sir? Good
Richard Eisen,
you.
I am great.
Okay. And Jay Felly, Jason Feller, good to see you over there, sir.
Richard, good day.
Good to see you. TJ Jefferson, how are you?
I am fantastic, Rich.
Oh, well, I'm glad to hear all that. The candle is lit. This is a wonderful day in our neighborhood. We got ourselves no fewer than three guests. We've got our first guest joining us in 18 minutes' time, joining us in advance of the USFL playoffs that he is going to help call on NBC and also on Peacock. Your former coach, Jason Garrett, will be joining us on this program.
Nothing but love for Coach Garrett.
And if you've got Jason Garrett on one end of things, a Princeton grad, a man who is as straight and arrow as you potentially can get, one might think the opposite end of that spectrum will be David Boomer Wells, and he'll be joining us on this program as well. In advance of something else, you'll be seeing it on NBC and Peacock and everyone else.
You don't think Boomer could have got into Princeton?
I don't know. Well, I mean, he could drive his car onto campus, I guess. So
they do give out athletic scholarships.
They don't. No, they don't.
Okay,
no,
so you,
no,
he
really
probably
doesn't do that. No, no.
Yeah,
so
they, no. Yeah, you're right. He couldn't have.
He's been. And that Leonard Fournette's going to join this program.
Hey!
I can't wait to ask him
about that
text exchange that he said he had with Tom Brady when Fournette was going on his free agency tour up in New England, and Brady texted him, "What the hell are you doing up there? What's your ass doing up there?" Is that what he said? Right. So
you think Leonard immediately puckered up? I was like,
I better leave town.
I need to get to Logan Airport.
Let me get back to Logan. Exactly.
Who told Tommy?
So he's on the show in hour number three of this program. NBA draft is tonight.
Yeah, man.
Controversy in the Stanley Cup final.
Yeah, right.
As the Colorado Avalanche win in overtime and take a 3-1 lead. So the Tampa Bay Lightning, two-time defending Stanley Cup champs, need to win 3 in a row to maintain control of Lord Stanley's Cup. And the controversy was the game winner scored in overtime last night. Nazem Kadri hops off of the bench. Nathan MacKinnon takes his sweet time getting back to the bench. And sure enough, when the overtime game winner, the lamp lit by Kadri, MacKinnon sure looked like he was still on the ice. And
well, there's a reason for that, Rich.
You say that
he was
still on the ice, and all four officials, none of them whistle for too many men on the ice. Goal stands, and the Lightning are pissed. And you know, you take a look at it, and by the letter of the law, yes. And you could see all the hockey fans go back and forth on Twitter and everywhere else on social media, saying that, you know, they're just changing on the fly. You could see that there are people saying just by the letter of the law, the Lightning were in the right to be upset. And then you take a look at some other game winners that the Lightning themselves have scored in previous playoff games and playoff seasons past, and they had seven men on the ice, including their goalie. And isn't this something that could be called literally every line change?
I feel like for me, this is kind of like the holding of hockey, you know? Like,
it could be called on every
single... Yeah, you could
single...
call holding on every play and every line change. I feel like, you know, the guys aren't exactly hustling to the bench, Jay. You play hockey. Like, this is something that just happens.
You've done that hockey,
it's
right?
Part of the game. As they say in hockey, let's do that hockey.
You've done the hockey.
Yeah, that's how we learn. You minute on, minute off. It's changing on the fly, part of the game.
And the reason why it's not reviewable is because it's a judgment call as to whether somebody is too far away from the bench when the line change has already been completed, trying to get back, or somebody who might be trying to get back and maybe on the way to get back kind of pinch in at the blue line, depending on the geography of where their bench is and where the puck is.
That's how it works. Lucky break. You hop off. Oh, hey, breakaway. I'm gone. That's just part of the game.
So the Lightning are outshot 11-3 in the overtime period. So you got to play better than the ref in a way. And that's my take. You could basically call. I mean, if this was the NFL, if the NFL rules applied where you could review too many men on the field, and if you still have a toe on the field when the ball is snapped.
Right.
And it doesn't matter how far away from the play you are and you're not getting off on time, and that's why it's reviewable. If you took that standard and said you could review every single line change and everybody who's coming off the ice must be off the ice in prior to somebody entering the ice and getting on the ice to start playing on the ice.
That would be an entirely different game.
You couldn't do it.
How it is, right? That's not hockey.
Then the rule is 5 feet from the bench, and you know, no, you can kind of guess what 5 feet looks like, and are you 4 feet?
Yeah. Did it have any bearing on the play? Probably not.
Well, I mean, Lightning fans would say it had all the bearing on the play because the guy who came on the ice while MacKinnon was ambling off scored the game winner. I think that's what makes it that much more difficult to swallow.
Yeah, right.
I mean, but. I mean,
can you imagine if they did enforce that? You would have guys diving over the bench every time. It would just be mayhem.
Every time, right?
It'd be craziness.
So that's the latest in the Stanley Cup Final. While we were going off the air yesterday at the Travelers in Cromwell, Connecticut, where I used to ply my craft professionally, Jay Monahan, the commissioner of the PGA Tour, had a press conference. As the LIV Tour is off this week, once again, they're back on next week. The big story this week is that Brooks Koepka is about to leave the PGA Tour and join his brother on the LIV Tour, and that's one more major championship winner and big-time star and huge name that's now coming off the PGA Tour board and is accepting the LIV money to go play on that tour that I essentially called an exhibition tour earlier this week. And the whole concept of growing the game of golf, I don't know how this grows the game of golf. It grows the wallets of golf, that's for sure. That's what it does. But what it does is it just takes away from the current construct of the PGA Tour and add it to another tour that has zero history and an odd way of playing. 54 holes and no cut, things of that nature. This is what Jay Monahan had to say yesterday, and I kind of... All right, well, we'll talk about it on the other side.
Let me be clear. I am not naive. If this is an arms race, and if the only weapons here are dollar bills, the PGA Tour can't compete. The PGA Tour, an American institution, can't compete with a foreign monarchy that is spending billions of dollars in an attempt to buy the game of golf. We welcome good, healthy competition. The LIV Saudi Golf League is not that. It's an irrational threat, one not concerned with the return on investment or true growth of the game.
And interesting enough, while he spoke, LIV Golf took that moment to tweet out that Brooks Koepka had indeed left the PGA Tour. So The PR fight is afoot, and he's right, man. This is not a rational approach at all. If you can take the approach that you do things to turn a profit, you know, if you do things to actually run a business, then this is irrational. This is not any type of, one would say, conventional warfare. This is, you can't, like, look, nobody can compete in any business. If you are running a business and you're trying to run a business and somebody comes in with more money than you and doesn't care if they lose it, because the idea is to just have the business so your other business ventures are potentially more palatable to join and partner up with. If that's what the Saudis are attempting to do, and the LIV Golf Tour folks are absolutely in on all of that because they want to just make folks like Jay Monahan uncomfortable and potentially less viable in the world. I think that's already a, if I may use a phrase, mission accomplished banner should be hung there. Although this one is truly a mission that has been accomplished. No doubt about it. And certainly the PGA Tour is doing whatever they can, because they announced yesterday as well the actual number is $45 million in what's being called incremental purse. That's a great purse. Incremental purse.
Can I get some of that?
I'll look into that incremental purse.
Thank you.
In small
the Genesis Invitational just up the road from here, the Arnold Palmer Invitational, the World Golf Challenge, Dell Technologies Match Play, and the Memorial. So Jack and Arnie's tournaments will go from a total purse of $12 million to $20 million. The Century Tournament of Champions goes from 8.2 to 15 in the Players' Championship. Now he's got a purse of $25 million, and the FedEx St. Jude Invitational and BW Championship are going to jump to $20 million. And for all the players who go in that, you know, great. And for the fans, you know, what does that mean for us? Well, it means the hot dog will now cost $25 when you go to these events, I guess. and also, if you want to watch these events and see the best stars in it, this will help keep them there.
Yeah,
it's no money out of your pocket, I guess, unless you're going to these events. It's the partners. As Monahan said, one of the things we've heard over the last several months from our sponsors is, please tell us what we can do to help. Monahan's like, okay, dig deeper. Let's get the purses up. Let's go. Maybe that might keep a player from accepting the Saudi money, potentially. Here's the thing that I thought of the other day about Phil. Is what a shame of what's become of a guy who just had nothing but smiles, and, you know, he had those big old sunglasses, aviators on, thumbs up and everybody as he's winning a championship last year in that pandemic year, which we're still in. I guess I should stop referring to past years as pandemic years. We're still in it. But I mean, just seeing him, the gregarious Phil, the happy-go-lucky Phil. That might not be the real Phil. Who knows? But we as fans, and him at the match with Brady and Rogers and DeChambeau. We came on the air here the day after, and I'm like, what a career he will have as a broadcaster.
So good.
He makes you smarter. He knew how to move the event along. He knew how to keep it going. He knew how to chop it up with the guys, but also knowing that there is a listening and viewing audience at home who would love to get in on what they're talking about. He let us in. He was wired up. He was coaching them up. He was also getting in their grill. He made it a far more entertaining product. And I thought to myself, when he's done playing, or he's beginning to finish playing, he should go on a tower. I said that. This week, Sir Nick Faldo said he's retiring from broadcasting after 16 years at CBS, meaning there's going to be a seat next to Nance. And I thought to myself, that could have been Phil's. If he wanted, obviously, who knows if he wants to do that. It is a grind. But if he's willing to go on the tour and play, or he was not a big fan of the tour and he didn't want to give them his name and full faith and credit and brand and lend it to it. And I know broadcasting for the broadcasting PGA Tour events for a major broadcasting network might not be his cup of tea either. But he could have been sitting in this tower next to Nance for 16 years himself if he wanted to. His mid-60s, however long he wants to do it. That's gone. Poof. Out the door. What a career he could have had post-playing. And now I guess he's making his money on the LIV Tour, and we'll see how popular this becomes. I proffer to say, once football returns, this conversation about LIV versus PGA and PGA versus LIV is going to take a backseat until maybe next year. We'll see how it plays out, if anybody's going to go seek it out online. Can't wait to see how these guys do at the next event, 54-hole shotgun start, something like that. The curiosity factor, the rubbernecking factor, that maybe somebody winds up shooting a 60 and you want to see it. Like, what the hell happened right there? Oh, DeChambeau is in the final group with Patrick Reed, or Koepka is in the final group with Phil, who had a great weekend. I mean, you're going to start to tune into that sort of thing, will you? Won't you? After a while, I think this whole LIV versus PGA Tour thing is going to burn out. And Phil's going to look around. And now what? His bank account may be back to dormy from what you read her about. Or better than that. And that's his own personal life. But I just thought to myself, what a career in broadcasting he could have had. And the seat's open. The seat's open. Right now, seat's open. I don't know who CBS is going to fill it with. That's what I thought. Like,
Trevor Immelman is taking over next year. Trevor Immelman.
There you go. I had no idea.
Masters champ.
Okay. And I'm sure Nance and him will be a terrific listen, and because Nance makes everybody look great.
He's been doing the match broadcasts, and he's been great.
I've enjoyed his. It's terrific, but Phil would have been just the guy. I mean, we would have been listening to him for ever and a day. Making it smarter, being funny, yep. Talking about when I was here, when I was there, when I did this, when I did that. You know, having an immense, vast library of experience from which to tap, just like Brady's going to have coming up in whenever he's done. We'll talk to Leonard Fournette
in 2028.
Yeah, right. 29. Maybe so. I don't know. I don't know. But I not to belabor it, I just thought that would have been Phil's seat. Could have been Phil's seat. Don't know if CBS wanted him in that seat. Don't know if he wanted that seat, but that's the next step he could have done. Played a few tournaments. I don't know how he would have, you know, called it. What was happening when Faldo was playing the Masters? Did he play earlier in the morning and then he took to the booth later on in the day? I mean, I guess CBS could have dealt with something like that at Augusta National, but not anymore. That birdie, if you will, has flown. Let's take a break right here on the Rich Eisen Show. Jason Garrett, baby, let's talk some ball. The NFC West is TJ Jefferson's best player in the history of the franchise. Look-see. We're going to have a What's More Likely Today here on a Thursday edition. Lots of NFL on the brain today. Jason Garrett, now of NBC, when we come back. 844-204 Rich, number to dial here on the Rich Eisen Show. He is on the Mercedes-Benz Vans phone line. He's one of my favorite people that I've gotten to meet, come across in the National Football League. He is now part of NBC Sports. He'll be part of Football Night in America starting this fall. But coming up this very Saturday in primetime, 8 Eastern time, on the field of the Hall of Fame game that's normally played in the National Football League at the Tom Benson Hall of Fame Stadium in Canton, Ohio, 8 Eastern on NBC and Peacock. It's going to be the USFL playoffs, the Birmingham Stallions against the New Orleans Breakers in the South Division Final in primetime. Jack Collinsworth on the call with Jason Garrett here on the Rich Eisen Show. How you doing, Jason?
I'm doing fantastic, Rich.
Uh-oh.
Your voice, man.
It's good to chat. It's good to chat with you. Absolutely fine. But your phone is cutting it out. Are you on a cell phone right now, Jason?
I actually am. Is it killing you?
It is. We're gonna tap out and call you right back in a second, right here on the Rich Eisen.
Let's start again.
Alrighty. Yeah. And then we'll just start again. There you go. That's pop him back on hold there, and let's see what's going on right here on the Rich Eisen. There he goes.
Coach,
I was sharing, and then all of a sudden, I just wanted to get to him on time, and the phone crapped out right there. Here's what we're gonna do. I'm gonna blame Adam for that. You know,
Adam said he was fine when he talked to him.
Fine when I talked to him. Oh, SMH. So he's shaking his head back there.
Yeah, he's like, come on, man.
Okay,
coach is making me look bad.
Tell him not to move around.
That's what I said. That's my note to Adam to tell Coach Garrett.
I was going to say that was ballsy of Adam.
Is it really?
Don't move around. Stay in one spot.
Can you stay in one spot? Can you stay in one position there?
I mean, that's a thing. You move around, the signal changes. We don't know where he is. It could be anywhere.
Well, I think he might be in Canton, Ohio already.
He could be with Del Tufo right now.
Well, that's right. Mike is doing that game.
Mike is there.
We should text Del Tufo, tell him to go find Coach.
He flew there first class.
I think he might be calling in from the old landline right now. I don't know. Let me see. Because I have his number. Let's see if it matches.
Nah, I think it's the same.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah, just don't move.
Just don't move. We're checking on Jason Garrett. This is called content, everybody.
Just don't move.
I have a different number for him. Maybe, did he change his number? Didn't let me know?
New phone, who dis?
All right. 844-204-RICH is the number to dial here on the program. Later on, David Wells will be joining us, and I'm hoping a much better phone line in advance of promoting also something on NBC. And then Leonard Fournette will be joining us on the program, fresh off of another big season for him in Tampa, Florida. We've spoken to him when he was on the Jacksonville Jaguars. Wasn't one of his favorite times in his life.
A little different,
you know,
for Lenny.
A
little different situation.
Let's go to our phone lines then, the ones that are actually working. Nathan in Los Angeles, let's take his call right here on the program. What's up, Nathan?
Hey, Rich, great to talk to you.
Right back at you. Thanks for calling in.
I'm happy to get to fill in and talk about Tony Siragusa, the man we lost yesterday.
Yeah, what a horrible. Age 55, is that how old he was?
Something he was 55, like that. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
I was sharing on Dan Patrick's show today. I called him a Hall of Fame personality, and I wanted to get your thoughts on that, on him and who else you might include in a Hall of Fame personality. You know, Shannon Sharpe is a Hall of Fame personality, probably. John Randall's a Hall of Fame personality.
Hmm.
Tony Siragusa definitely belongs on the list, but I'd love to get your thoughts on him and just the idea of...
Yeah, man. I met him like once, and he was, and thanks for the call, Nathan. He was larger than life. He was exactly who you saw on television. And, you know, anybody who was on that team that I've gotten to know, Rod Woodson, Ed Reed, although Ed, I think, came the year after they won that Super Bowl, but, Ray Lewis will tell you that Siragusa up front was a major part of what they were doing. That what Siragusa did up front, Sam Adams, remember him too? Big, huge body.
Huge.
Helped keep people off of Ray, you know, yeah. And then placed the pressure that allowed the back end of the defense to lock down and work together with the front. But Goose doing it and then him being podium worthy for the Super Bowl and so on and so forth was a major reason why they won. Part of one of the greatest defenses of all time. You can make the case that the 2000 Ravens, along with the 85 Bears, greatest defenses to ever win a Super Bowl. And you have to obviously give a tip of the cap and a mention to the championship years of the Pittsburgh Steelers as well, of the Steel Curtain years. And then Siragusa, if you remember, when Fox hired him, they put him on the field.
Yeah, like in the end zone.
In the end zone. He was always just standing there, you know, right underneath the goalpost and given his opinions during the game from the field. And it worked.
It worked. It was awesome.
It
yeah,
worked.
He was so funny, man.
It worked in a way that the booger on the cart did not. But it's so rare to have somebody who's part of the broadcast position on the field providing analysis. And I never asked anybody from Fox as to why they did that or if Siragusa, if he came up with that idea. But I think it was, right? Wasn't it Goose and Moose together?
Goose and Moose. Yeah, they were on the same call with Dick Stockton.
Dick Stockton, right?
Yeah.
And Siragusa would chime in from the field, from his position underneath the goalpost.
And he always had some hilarious.
He was, yeah, and it was always, it worked. It just, again, it worked in a way that I don't think, have we seen anybody else attempt to do that? Other than, I know the booger on the cart was something. But at any rate,
I don't think so. Yeah,
may Tony Siragusa rest in peace. Right,
a terrible
there.
Loss. Yeah. I mean, part of his story, his father died really young. I think he was 48 of a heart attack as well, and it's something that Goose always kind of worried about. And big guy, larger than life personality, as Nathan said, and definitely gonna be missed. Rough day for the Ravens family. Yesterday.
Yeah, horrible day.
So,
for
yeah, may he rest in peace. By the way, some major college football news just broke.
Major college football news just broke.
That the longtime recruiting of Arch Manning, the nephew of Peyton and Eli, the son of Cooper Manning, or Cupper, as he's referred to in that family, grandson of Archie Manning. Arch Manning, whose high school games in New Orleans have made it all over the place on social media. I believe a couple of his games made it on national television as well. Yeah. And didn't Ole Miss kind of paint the names in the end zone? And they did all sorts of things to try and get his attention and his...
People were showing up after the football season to Arch Manning's basketball games.
Right.
Like Lane Kiffin and all these guys would show up to his basketball
Nick
games.
Saban, right?
Crazy.
Well, the winner is Steve Sarkisian in the University of Texas.
Wow.
Texas is getting Arch Manning.
Ole Miss, LSU, Georgia, like just name the SEC powerhouse. We're in the running for Arch. And
Texas.
He goes to UT.
Gets
man.
The win. They have got to be over the moon about that.
He's going to be he's going to make more in NIL than any player ever, probably, right? Before he's the number one draft pick in 2026.
Well, he is absolutely the apple of the burnt orange eye right now. No question about it. What a huge development that is in the world of college football, where Texas has been struggling for so long, and now a savior in the form of Arch Manning is showing up to the University of Texas. And this will reshape many ways, potentially, what goes down in the SEC and
Texas and Oklahoma are now joining the SEC. So it's going to be wild.
Just in time.
Wow. What a coup for Texas, man.
All right. So joining us on the program on the Mercedes-Benz Vans phone line is Jason Garrett. You there, Jason?
Hi, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Hey, coach. It's like you're sitting next to me.
I felt like that was amateur hour on my end. I apologize.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? Is that a broadcasting rookie mistake to just hop on your cell phone and do stuff like that? I mean, that could be that, Jason.
Yeah, I think so. I'm not that seasoned veteran that you are.
You know what? Jason, I can help with that sort of stuff from now on for you. Congratulations on that gig with NBC. Congrats on that.
Yeah, really excited about it, Rich. I had the opportunity to do these USFL games all spring with the crew from NBC, and I just can't tell you how impressed I am with everybody at NBC. It's been an incredible experience right from the get-go, and to have the opportunity to continue that this fall is really exciting for me.
And so what is your plan this fall? What exactly are you going to be doing with NBC this fall? I think I know, but I'll just let you reveal what you got.
Yeah, I'm going to be part of the Sunday night show, Football Night in America, with Coach Dungy and Maria Taylor and Chris Sims and the whole crew that they have up there. And again, it's an extension of the work I've done in the USFL. And, you know, I've gotten to know those guys really well through the years because, you know, with the Cowboys, we were always playing, you know, three Sunday night games. So they became, you know, friends of mine, and just to have the opportunity to work with them, again, both in the USFL and now in the fall is exciting.
Yeah, I know, and you've got three Cowboys Sunday night football games already on the docket. You know how things can get flexed around as well and flexed into right off the bat, Dallas and Tampa. And so, you know, obviously you are going to be asked to be analytical and sometimes critical of the Dallas Cowboys or anybody that you may know and appreciate, certainly the Giants organization as well. What is your take on what the Cowboys have done this offseason? My opinion is that they haven't taken a step forward. They've taken a step back. What are your thoughts on the subject matter, Jason?
Well, first of all, they had an awfully good year last year. And, you know, they didn't get the job done against San Francisco in the playoff game. And so the starting point is probably it's a really good football team. And I know many of those guys. You know, we drafted many of them. And I know the kind of men they have in that locker room and the leaders they have in that locker room. And there's no doubt in my mind that they're going to respond the right way. You know, one of the things that that's been really impressive to me about the organization and that team is, you know, they've continued the off-season program, the work ethic that has been such a big part of that program, you know, this past year. You hear stories about everybody being there, 100% attendance all throughout the off-season program. And, again, I know Tyron Smith, you know, Zach Martin, Dak Prescott, Zeke Elliott, you know, all those guys that they have been the cornerstone players on that team. So they'll respond the right way. The business of football is challenging. As we all know, you get these, you know, these big time players and they have opportunities to go elsewhere in free agency and it's hard to keep everybody. So sometimes people will look at that and say, hey, boy, there's this mass exodus. I don't know about that. I know they got a lot of really good cornerstone players there who've been great players for a long time and they're excited about the young players they have. So I wouldn't bet against this team.
So, What advice would you give Mike McCarthy? I know he's got a trophy in the case. He's been around quite a bit and has his own frame of reference. But Dan Quinn is sitting there, defensive coordinator, and Jerry's already even said publicly, like so many defensive coordinators and offensive coordinators stick around because they know they have a shot at the job eventually, using your name even in that soundbite to prove a point that's why Dan Quinn stuck around. And McCarthy still has the job, you know, even though a vote of confidence was just given by Jerry moments a couple days ago because of Sean Payton's name. So what advice would you give Mike McCarthy, Jason Garrett, having been in that position yourself for as long as you were?
Well, I think the biggest thing for any head coach and really for any player in the NFL is really just focus on yourself and what you need to do to be your best. And I know that's a cliche and everyone thinks that, well, that's coach speak and all of that, but it's so true, and it's so true. Certainly, in a place like Dallas, there's a lot of people who make their living speculating about things and digging things up and stirring things up. That's just the world that we live in. You know, the days of Walter Cronkite telling you the news as it is, you know, at 6 o'clock every weekday evening. Those are long gone. It's 24-hour news cycles, and we're trying to stir the pot. And so, when you're in those roles, you have to just really focus on what you need to do to be your best. And this was a theme that we tried to use with all of our players through the years. You know, players getting into Twitter wars and all of this kind of stuff. It's like, hey, let's just lock in on what we need to do each day to be our best. And when you're preaching that message to your team, sometimes you got to preach it to yourself. And you got to say, hey, everything that I'm trying to share with these guys to help them individually be their best, help our team be its best. You know, sometimes you got to say, hey, I got to remind myself of those things. And not that you think about it a lot, but you're asked about it a lot. And so you just kind of lock in and say, hey, this is what I need to do to be my best today. Mike obviously is a fantastic coach, has been for a long time. He understands the importance of doing that. And I think they have a really good team. And they obviously have a really good head coach and a lot of good players. And they got a chance to be a good team this year.
What is it like to be in a meeting with Jerry Jones after a loss, Jason? What is that like?
Oh, Jerry Jones is—he's a fascinating guy. You don't have the success that he's had throughout his life, and really everything he's touched. He has amazing amazing abilities. He has amazing wisdom and intelligence about so many different topics. And, I would say he was incredible after losses. He was incredible, when times were tough. His support for coaches and for players and, when the football part of it was tough or things in your individual life were challenging, their depths and those kinds of things. I mean, he was incredible, and I saw the examples through the years when I was playing there, when I was coaching there, when things like that happened for me. I felt it personally. So, there's a perception about Jerry Jones, and I think some of it from the outside might be accurate, but there are a lot of stuff he's portrayed in a certain way that I simply don't agree with. And very fortunate to have the opportunity to have played for him and to coach for him for many years, and he's really made my life better. So I got nothing but great things to say about Jerry Jones.
No, I'm not fishing for you to say something negative about him, Jason. Just so I can stipulate that, you said he's incredible and he is fascinating. It just is the general sense in Dallas that after all this time, that he'll put his finger in the pot in a way that he should not. That might run detrimental to the ultimate success of this team, and that's what I'm trying to dive into here. Having had all that time with him,
Yeah, so. He was always so supportive. He always wanted to do what was necessary to win, and I always felt like I didn't do a good enough job communicating, what we needed to do if there was a decision made that was against some of the things that I wanted to do, whether it was hiring someone or drafting someone or signing someone or making a decision about personnel or how we're doing things. And to me, it's the coach's job in any organization to create the vision for what you want the team and the program to be. Mm. And it's your job to lead, and it's your job to lead upward to ownership, to general managers, and certainly lead to your coaches and to your players and all the staff members who work with the team. So anytime something didn't go in a direction that I felt like maybe we should have done it this way, I always put it back on myself to say, clearly I didn't communicate that well enough. I didn't make the argument well enough to get the decision or the outcome that we wanted. It's a very collaborative organization. There's a lot of people. You have a lot of conversations about the decisions you want to make. Ultimately, Jerry is the owner, general manager. He makes the decisions. He's the one who drafts the player. But I always felt like when we did a good job, when I did a good job communicating the vision, communicating the reason why we wanted this particular guy, and we created consensus throughout the organization, that's when we did our best work. And anytime we fell short of that, I put it back on myself for not doing my job well enough.
Jason Garrett here on the Rich Eisen Show, calling in from Canton, Ohio, Tom Benson Hall of Fame Stadium, where the New Orleans Breakers and the Birmingham Stallions will battle in the South Division Final in the inaugural USFL playoffs that you can see on Saturday, 8 Eastern time on NBC and Peacock. I wish you good luck on that, Jason, and let's chat down the line. I always love running into you whenever I do, and certainly this is one of them. I really appreciate it, Jason.
Rich, always enjoy it, man. Keep up the great work.
Right back at you. I look forward to the call with you and Jack Collinsworth coming up on this weekend.
We got Birmingham Stallions, New Orleans Breakers. Are you kidding me? Let's go.
Let's go. It's football. It's football. It's just I can't wait for the whole season to start. And then again to see you on Football Night in America, Maria Taylor, Tony Dungy, Chris Sims, and you. We'll chat again soon, hopefully, Jason. You be well.
Thanks, man. Take care.
There's one and only Jason Garrett here on the program. You're the Cowboy fan. What'd you think?
Of the interview or him in general?
Well, I mean, dude, of what he just had to say there.
You know, it's hard, man. Because a lot of times as a Cowboy fan, you get a lot of pushback towards Coach Garrett. And as I've told you guys, I'm not one of those people. I'm a big fan of the guy. I agree with what he says about Jerry, though. At some point, Jerry does great stuff, but there's some things that you obviously shake your head at.
Well, here's the deal, man, is that he is, I think what he just said is very rosy outlook. I understand that. and that he does know the men in the locker room. And
yeah, so it's kind of hard for him to maybe talk about them.
But when he said he was supportive after a loss, people are like, oh, yeah, he's full of it right there. Garrett, like, it's been a long time since the Cowboys churned through HCs there.
They really don't.
They don't do that.
They really do it, yeah.
They don't.
Not on the Steelers level.
Obviously, Jimmy to Switzer is one thing, but after Switzer left, there was a churning of coaches that stopped.
With Garrett?
Well, it stopped with Wade, to be honest with you. Yeah. Well, he stuck with Wade way longer than Cowboys fans thought he should have.
But he also stuck with Jason.
And he did.
Kind of longer than maybe people thought.
And now he's doing it with McCarthy at this point in time. Like, they do make a decision at the coaching spot and then don't revisit it that often. Take a break. 844-204-RICH, number to dial here on the Rich Eisen Show. Don't go anywhere. We're back with more in a moment. 844-204-RICH, number to dial here on the program. The Callaway Rogue ST drivers I've been telling you about, you need to check them out, and you need to grab them, and you need to bomb it off the tee, because that's what these sticks are built to completely do. Bomb it. Speed tune to be Callaway's fastest, most stable driver ever. Every Rogue ST, that's the speed tune. Engineered with a new tungsten speed cartridge. Gives you more speed on off-center hits, provides more forgiveness thanks to high MOI. But that's just the beginning. Callaway's engineered a Rogue ST for every player. I fit into the max. It's been an incredible combination of distance and forgiveness. If you want more shot shape correction, there's a dedicated draw model, the Max D, the Max LS, stronger trajectory with a more neutral ball flight. If you're a true player, the Rogue ST Triple Diamond LS, that's the compact low spin head tour players love. Callaway's thought through every aspect of speed, so all you've got to do is go Rogue. Find your Rogue ST driver at callawaygolf.com/go-rogue. Okay, every now and then, I got to come on this show and do this because, you know, if this guy was doing it for my team or your team in New York City, TJ, or if he's doing it for your team up there in Boston, Chris, or with all due respect to our friends down in Orange County, if he was doing it in Chavez Ravine, if he was doing it for St. Louis, if he was doing it for the Cubs, this is all we would be talking about. Shohei Ohtani, he plies his craft for the Los Angeles Angels. And once again, under the cloak of the Pacific time zone and yet another Angels season that just appears to be thrown into the shrug emoji category of like, what gives with this team that has the most potentially, arguably, generationally talented player of this generation and Mike Trout on it. And now Shohei Ohtani doing things that not even Babe Ruth did. Not even Babe Ruth did. And he's doing things that only Babe Ruth did. And he's doing things that not even Babe Ruth did. This week, a two-home run game in a career-high 8 runs batted in against the Royals. 2 homers, 8 runs batted in. Angels lose the game. That's part of the reason why we're not talking enough about them. Next night, he starts. He retires 23 of the first 24 batters he faces, throws 8 scoreless, and strikes out a career-high 13. So a career-high 8 runs batted in on a 2-homer game one night, the next night. Let me repeat this. The next night.
Not a week later.
One sleep later.
Just went to bed, got up, came to the ballpark.
He takes the mound as a starting pitcher, retires 23 of the first 24 professional batters he faces, and strikes out a career-high 13. There's no words for it. Except exceptional, unprecedented,
damn.
Spectacular, damn.
Yeah, I mean, let's dig into the crate here.
And he's got a deep bag of pitches. He's not like a one note guy out there.
It's not a fastball curveball. You know what I mean? It's just like,
it's insane what he is doing. No, the Angels won that game, but that's the This is exactly, is this the most Angels thing ever? That Trout's back and Ohtani's doing it now, and they're protecting each other in the lineup in certain ways, although it's Ohtani in front of Trout most nights. And Rendon is out for the year, so you spend a ton of money on him, and he's not doing well. And he's out for the year. And the team itself started out like an ice house of fire, a 14 game losing streak in which Joe Maddon gets fired, and Ohtani comes up with 8 runs batted in on a 2 homer night as a hitter one night, and then a starter the next night with 13 strikeouts, and they split the games, 500. Average, mediocre, except unprecedented. I don't know how you make heads or tails of it. It's wild.
Let me ask you this.
Yes, sir.
Okay. One of the most impressive things, maybe the most impressive thing in all of baseball's history, 150 years, right? Johnny Vandermeer, back-to-back no-hitters.
Yes, sir.
In back-to-back starts.
Yes.
Okay. Well, we probably will never see that again in our lifetime.
I agree.
Is what Ohtani just did the last 2 games more impressive to you?
Back to back, though.
That is
going to be, you know.
But on back to back nights where I'm going to grab a bat, two bombs, and knock in 8. And then come back the next night.
And the next day, cool. I'm going to take the ball.
And dominate. Then, yeah. Strike out 13.
Career high.
I mean,
well,
career high RBIs 2 nights ago, career high strikeouts the next night.
Only one other player. I feel like this is like DP's stat of the day.
Old gen stat right now?
Yeah. Do you have old gen stats? Do you got it? Okay.
Yes, sir.
Okay, here we go. I think.
I haven't heard this in forever.
We used to do this all the time. We got to get back to it. We got to get back to it. Only one other player in the history of Major League Baseball has had an 8 RBI game and a 10 strikeout game in their career.
Oh, I know, I think.
In their career. Like their entire playing career. Not back-to-back nights. Just give themselves an entire lifetime of professional baseball playing. I don't think you'll know who it is.
I mean, Babe Ruth's the only thing that comes to mind. No, like,
Tony Cloninger.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
That's right. Tony Cloninger. Oh,
yeah. Who's my next guest?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
It's so impressive. Here's a question for you guys. Does Ohtani stay with the Angels?
Oh boy. And that's the whole deal about Ohtani is I think he does.
Yeah.
I think the success is born out of the fact that he doesn't have a microphone in his face every 2 seconds like he would in New York or Boston.
He's only making $5.5
million. Oh, that's going to change. That'll change.
Yeah, he's arbitration next year. Justin. Free agent in 24. Yeah.
Meanwhile, Judge and the Yankees are still slated for arbitration tomorrow. I don't know. Don't get me started. Thank goodness there's a hard out in 6 seconds. Hour number 2 coming up.
You can keep talking through the break, though.
For the real story behind some of wrestling's biggest moments, it's Something to Wrestle with Bruce Pritchard and Conrad Thompson, too.
All-time Hogan opponents, Macho Man's got to be in the conversation. Where's Andre for you?
I've always said Andre was number one.
Wow.
Because even going back before, you know, Hulk Hogan was a babyface, Hulk and Andre were able to go in and headline at the New Orleans Superdome, at Shea Stadium in Japan. Wherever they went, that was an attraction.
Something to Wrestle with Bruce Pritchard. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.